Let's play the feud. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Trailblaze. I'm Jamal Simmons.
I am Matt Butler.
Lots of news happening right now in the country, and we want to talk about what impact, if any of us going to have on the next presidential campaign. Odds are probably some. So the big thing is, obviously, this week is there was the death of Lindsey Graham, the senator from South Carolina. And I think there's two things to talk about with Lindsey Graham death. The first one is, how do you think Democrats should react to this? Because there's lots of discussion right now about how people are either mourning or marking his death or talking about it. A couple of people who might be possible 2028ers like Cory Booker have gotten caught up in that. So Matt, I'm just curious for you. I mean, obviously, you know, you've been around Washington for a long time. Lindsey Graham has passed away, which is always sad for people's family and friends. But what about him as a public figure?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to look at the totality of Lindsey Graham's life and the totality of his public service. From what it sounds like is, you know, he was one of the more affable senators. He would reach across the aisle. He would cut deals across the aisle. And up until about 2016, I would say that he was probably one of the favorite Republican senators for Democratic senators, right? He was the one that they would look to like try to cut deals and try to get a voice of reason, you know, when there was tension in the Senate. Since 2016, though, he's gone on a very, very different path and has sort of, you know, completely, you know, abdicated all of his morals in an attempt to stay relevant in the eyes of Donald Trump. And, you know, I think, you know, people are complex, but we have to look at the totality of his service. And you can't, you know, just because the guy died, you can't ignore the last 10 years of his policymaking. So I think, I think people are being respectful. They are giving credit to him. They're feeling sorry for the family, but still holding him responsible for what he's done in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, my problem with Lindsey Graham is, first of all, again, respect to his family, friends, the people who follow him. I know it's a big adjustment to lose somebody who's a big part of your life. So I don't want to minimize that for people. But as a public figure, you know, I've been in green rooms with Lindsey Graham where he was there, you know, waiting to go on set to do a TV interview at the same time I was. And one of the things that bothered me about him is that he would just trash Donald Trump in private. He would make jokes about him. He would ridicule him. And not just in that kind of soft way that we all might do with somebody we support. Like, yeah. Oh, yeah, Bill Clinton, you know. Yeah, guys, really, ladies, man. You know, like, you know, we might make a joke. But, you know, with Trump, it really was like he had no respect for him. And then he'd go on television and he would defend whatever asinine thing came out of the president or the administration as if he was 100% supporter. And I just think that kind of rank duplicitousness is part of what people are pissed off about. I mean, they don't think anything is real. Like, it's all bullshit that's happening in Washington. And so why should they pay attention to it? Which is why they end up nominating people like Graham Platner, right? Because they're like, all you guys are full of shit. What do we care about this guy's background? You know, you find out there are things that are beyond the pale. But until the latest accusations of sexual assault, I mean, people were willing to sort of stand by all of it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, Lindsey Graham won his last couple of elections by, I think, 10 points and even maybe more, 15 points. But this race, he was only up about 2 or 3 points in 3 or 4 polls in a row. So all 3 or 4 of the last polls before his death, he was inside the margin of error to Annie Andrews, a doctor in South Carolina who was mounting a very serious charge to take his seat. And I think part of that was the fact that he has been so deferential to Trump. To really put himself, to abdicate all of his morals and all of the things that he stood for. Donald Trump, you know, is basically the opposite of all those, but he was like, you know, like, sign me up. I'm on the bandwagon. And I think that rubs people really the wrong way. And, you know, it was going to be a tough year for Republicans and it was going to be a tough year for Lindsey Graham.
Yeah. I talked to a couple of people in South Carolina this week after death to find out what they thought about the Andrews Senate campaign and what was happening. a couple of big questions. Initially, it was who was the governor going to pick to be the stand-in? We saw that he picked Lindsey Graham's sister, which seems crazy, but probably not that crazy. Considering where we are as a country, probably not that crazy. And then the other one was who would be the Republican nominee in the fall? And they've got to have a primary, which I think is going to be like August 11th.
Flash primary.
Right. To get that done. And so, but people said she's a pretty good, you know, her campaign is in good shape. She's raising money. She's working hard. And I bet you now that this has happened, she's going to get an influx of money and an influx of attention, at least, you know, from the general populace to say, hey, let's give her a shot. Let's see what she can do. Because without an incumbent on the ballot, it's a weird year. It's a very weird year. You might pick up something even crazy like South Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, I think to play devil's advocate on that, though, is, you know, Lindsey Graham was a pretty battered candidate. His approval was down, I think, at about 40%. And, you know, things weren't going to get any better because it wasn't like he was going to turn his back on Trump anytime soon between now and November. So, you know, the question is could Annie Andrews have had a better chance against Graham than she could against somebody else who is not well known and it's going to be a Republican. They're going to be able to check the box. I think that's a question. And once we have a candidate, you know, Annie Andrews is really going to have to define that candidate very quickly to be able to have a chance to get across the line in November. It's not an easy state to win. Trump plus 18? So
yeah, absolutely. It's not easy, but I think the Democrats have been saying they've been closing in the gaps in some of these margins. So it's not, even though Trump wins big, the Democrats lose by like 10, maybe, let's say.
Think about how much money Jamie Harrison raised against him the last time and lost by 10 points.
Right. And so, Jamie lost by 10. So that's not insignificant, but what's interesting is you and I know trying to stand a campaign up, a statewide campaign up in 3 weeks. First of all, you got to run a primary, and then you got to be able to go from August to September, October, really 2.5 months. You got to be able to run a statewide campaign. You need staff. You need locations. You need literature. Mm-hmm. You need an advertising campaign. There's all kinds of just check mark boxes you got to get through in order to run a statewide campaign.
Yep.
The one advantage she will have is her team's up and
she's
cranking.
They gotta, they're good. Yeah. She's going to be able to keep cranking. So
they got to switch out the names, you know, switch out the negative. As you said, they got to define the other opponent, but at least they don't have to go out and find people in office space, right? They've already got that.
Yeah. And I'd be interested to know if, I bet a lot of the opposition research exists on most of the people who are going to be considered for Senate, because most of them just ran for governor in the primary and were not successful. And those are the three or four people that they're talking about are the most likely people to be appearing in this sort of flash primary. So, you know, if her research is already done too, they can start prepping ads right now and be ready on August 12th for whoever comes out of that primary, which will be pretty cool.
Well, I bet you, so to bring it back home to our sort of topic, I bet you what you'll see, you will see some 2028 prospects go down there and campaign with her. Because why not? Right?
Oh, for sure. Like, for sure.
Whether she wins or loses, nobody's going to... If she loses, nobody will blame you. If she wins, you get to claim credit. And you get the credit of going down there and campaigning, having a reason to campaign. And the state, you want to spend some time in 2028 anyway, because it'll be early primary state.
It's a double win for them. I mean, I don't see any way that the DNC doesn't pick South Carolina as one of those first four states. So it makes all the sense in the world to spend some time there. And you're there for Annie Andrews. You're not there for yourself, which that always looks good that you're there for somebody else. And, you know, you're doing good for yourself as well. So I do think we'll see people starting to descend on that state over the next couple of weeks.
The one thing about her also is she hasn't run for office before. Mm-hmm. She's a doctor, as you mentioned when we first started. I bet you she's had some Republican patients, right? Or she's a pediatrician, sure. So, you know, parents, you know, are Republicans. It'd be interesting to see if any of those folks step up and say, like, I'm not political, but Dr. Andrews is taking care of my kid for the last 10 years, and I think she's the best thing we've ever had. You know, and that could be really interesting. You get like one of these, she's just, you know, in an era where people want the non-politician, you might get a non-politician in a year where people are hungry for that. I don't know.
If
the Republicans run like some Congressman Joe Wilson or somebody, you know, who's been around for a long time, it's like the non-politician versus the stale one. Who knows?
Yeah, I think, look, I think you should start right now. It's four. That sounds pretty smart. You know, maybe we start a media consulting firm. I mean, I think the one thing I do is Joe Wilson, I think, said he's not running for the seat. So he's, I think he's taken himself out. But there are other members of Congress that are thinking about it. So Nancy Mace is on there. And is obviously she's a lame duck now. She's not running for reelection. But, you know, she was not successful in that gubernatorial primary. But she's looking at it and seeing if this is the way that she can continue to serve the people of South Carolina. So, which I'm sure Donald Trump will be very happy to have Nancy Mace in the United States Senate.
Right. Okay. So that is South Carolina. And we also saw this week, there's some attention in Iowa. People are circling through there for the governor and Senate candidates out there. And we're seeing some Democrats show up and dinners and whatnot. And there was a quote in a newspaper. I don't have it directly in front of me, but there was a quote which I thought was funny, which was that there were, they wanted Democrats who'd won in competitive states to come out there and campaign, not people who'd won in D plus 10 states or Democrats won by 10% or more, which you can do the math on who those candidates are who won in pretty reliable Democratic states.
Yeah, I think, look, these are, you know, these quotes are attributed to senior Iowa officials who wanted to stay anonymous so that they could speak on the sensitive nature of this. I think there's a couple different things at play here. So number one, I think if you are stating these things, even if you're not putting your name to it, if people in the Iowa kind of apparatus are saying, we only want certain candidates here, we only want sort of the moderate, you know, Beshears, the, you know, Josh Shapiro's, they basically
Pete Buttigieg,
they know they're not going to get one of the early state designations. Like, they know that it's over, because I think if you wanted it, you'd be welcoming all of the candidates. So I think that's interesting. And we should actually, if we've got time, we should talk about the rules and the sanctions that the DNC Rules and Bylaws Committee passed a couple of weeks ago to punish states that want to try to go early from outside the four that get selected. So I think that's basically them saying, look, we know we're not going to get this, and so let's worry about the governor's race and the Senate race. I do think it forgets that, like, Bernie Sanders won the popular vote in the 2020 Iowa caucus, and he almost beat Hillary Clinton in 2016, or maybe even did beat Hillary Clinton in 2016.
Yeah, no, I think he did.
So, you know,
Iowa was a depressing place for the Clintons.
Yeah.
And Clinton never did well in Iowa.
No, exactly. So there is a big, there are a lot of very strong, progressive, liberal, Democratic voters in that state. And, you know, I think it seems a little odd to say, hey, don't come here if you're Gavin Newsom or Kamala Harris. You know, they didn't say AOC, but I would assume that that was also, you know, one of the names that they'd be thinking of. This does, speaking of Hillary Clinton, you know, I do think when you see them saying, look, Gavin Newsom probably should not show up here, it shows that Chris Hayes kind of Clinton problem, right? Like, you are, for the right thinks you are an antichrist California communist, and you're painted that way. The left thinks you're a corporate shill who is not for, you know, a wealth tax. And so you're getting it from both sides. And so, like, you know, so you're just kind of, you're this sort of middling candidate, not impressing anybody. But so it's another example of that. And people not wanting to come, even though he's, you know, close to the front runner in this race and, like, the most, almost one of the most recognized people after Kamala Harris. So I think that's,
well,
that's
the other name,
we'll see
that
what
was
happens.
That was the other name that was mentioned, which was Kamala Harris, that perhaps they didn't want Kamala Harris to come either. I think what they're trying to go after is, you know, branding their candidates as a different kind of Democrat, right? Like, clearly they just don't want, they don't want the most liberal names to come in there and have to have their candidates defend whatever positions, you know, Gavin Newsom has taken as governor of one of the more liberal states in the country.
Yeah, I think that's right. And you know, look, I they know the Iowa electorate better than I do. So, you know, if that's the strategy and they think that's what's going to get them across, I would love to have the Iowa State House, and I would love to have another senator from the state of Iowa be a Democrat. I mean, that'd be an amazing result for us in November.
It would be. So, so that's Iowa, and we talked a little bit about South Carolina and Annie Andrews. In Pennsylvania, well, before we go to Pennsylvania, let's talk about the other big news of the week.
We're going to talk about Kentucky?
Yeah, let's talk Kentucky. I don't have any bourbon. Is that bourbon in that yellow container?
No, sorry. No. It's just water.
The next time we do this, we got to talk bourbon. We do Kentucky. We got to talk Kentucky bourbon. So we had a proof of life in quotes photo from Mitch McConnell this week, and a lot of people on the internet, people ain't buying that that is like a legit picture of a healthy man. Let's just say that. That he may not be as healthy as the photo tries to portray.
Yeah, I mean, the picture makes him look like he's a happy man. So, you know, happy to be alive. Okay, so let's first acknowledge, I know that we are in bizarro times, but let's acknowledge that it is very strange that you have to have the governor of the state of Kentucky asking on a national TV broadcast for proof of life that the senior senator from his state is actually alive and is capable and is not incapacitated. Like, this is how is this happening? How have we come here? I mean, I shouldn't be surprised, but I still think we should try to hold on to a little bit of normalcy. So that's insane just from the beginning part of it.
In old times, I mean, I guess maybe they were enemies, but in old times, you would think at least the governor might like go by the hospital and like see the senator, right? Yeah. Wish him well or something. They do a photo op together, like, you know, trade flowers and chocolates to like make him, you know, hey guy, I went by to see the senator today. I think he's going to be okay. But that's not the world that we live in.
Yeah. Now, the in the 2028 of it all, though, I mean, Bashir is now saying, I'm going to appoint somebody. If you cannot get this guy to give us a timeline and some transparency on when he is going to return to the Senate, I'm going to appoint a new senator who will most likely be a Democrat to represent the people of Kentucky. And it's not totally clear cut that he's allowed to do it. The law is a little bit iffy, but he says, you know, the legislature has told him he can't do that. And he's like, I'm going to do it anyway. And which I think that is absolutely great for the state of Kentucky and for the balance of power in the Senate. And it's just great that you've got a Democrat who's going to take a very strong position and play aggressively within the rules, but like pushing the rules right up to the very end. It's exactly what the Republicans would do. And, you know, I like that he is thinking about this and talking about this and, you know, hey, it's a little bit murky, but I'm going to do it anyway. And let's figure out, let's see where the chips fall. So I love this for Bashir.
Yeah. The state legislature passed a law that said the governor could not appoint the sitting senator, a new senator, without their approval or some committee, and they, whatever, he couldn't do it. I think Bashir's point is that law is unconstitutional.
Yep.
And so his approach would be, I'm just going to do it. I'll appoint somebody, and then let's let the court decide. Which is absolutely the way that the Republicans would do it.
of course,
right?
I mean, look, here's the thing. Speaking of Mitch McConnell, like, you know, Merrick Garland nominated
for Mitch McConnell. This would be, right, this would be so much justice.
Exactly. It'd be 100% Mitch McConnell. But Mitch McConnell, you know, Merrick Garland nominated for the Supreme Court in March. And Mitch McConnell says, screw it. I'm sitting on this. We're going to let the voters decide in the presidential election in 2016 when the exact same situation happens within weeks, a much shorter time frame of the 2020 election. 2020 election, Ruth Bader Ginsburg dies.
That was Amy Coney Barrett.
They shove her through in 2 weeks. It's like, wait a second. I thought we were going to let the public decide where this goes. It's right. They're just
not
so,
in a presidential year. We can't do it in a presidential year. Oh, wait. Except it's just a presidential year where the Republicans are in charge.
So good on Bashir for saying, I'm just doing this. Like, this is what we need. I mean, this is the type of leadership that we need. And this is really what people like, and that they want somebody who's going to be aggressive and who's going to play, you know, who's not going to play nice, not going to play fair. I don't even think this is unfair. I mean, this is within the rules. And let's see what happens.
Let's see what happens. Go to court.
Yeah. And it's
for Bashir. For Bashir, it's fantastic. Let's be brass tacks. It's fantastic. Mark Kelly did better when Trump and Hegseth attacked him for that ad. I think Gavin Newsom, you know, went out in front and said that he was being investigated and his family by the Trump DOJ and IRS. Like, I think that has probably helped him some. It will, you know, being in a fight with Donald Trump or with the Republicans is good for people who want to run for president in 2028. It just is.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And look, Bashir's got a situation where I think he's got there are, you know, the people who are sort of really paying attention to this are starting to notice Andy Beshear. But the fact is that his recognition and sort of like on his like YouGov score, he's only between like 45 and 50% of like people who know who he is, like regardless of what they think of him, like half the public doesn't even know who the guy is. And so fights like this and issues like this that he can really get a lot of attention around and a lot of controversy, that's only good for him because they're going to hear who he is. And that will bode well for him because it seems like he's a relatively decent politician.
Yeah. And let's put on the table what the issues are. I think one of the issues with Andy Beshear, governor of Kentucky, is that he just seems like a really nice guy.
Yep.
And he seems like a nice guy in an era of sharks.
Yeah.
Of sharks and tarantulas, right? And nobody really knows if this nice guy, I mean, I think Wes Moore has the same problem. Nobody really knows if this nice guy can take the heat, take the pressure, fight through in an era that's filled with so many sharks in the water. And if he gets into a fight and can prove that even if he loses the fight, but that he relishes it and like he does well,
yeah,
I think that helps him. Yeah. And I think that's the kind of thing. That's why this matters, because it's an attitudinal part of the campaign process, not just a policy part.
Yep. I think you're exactly right. And look, he has been traveling like crazy. He has been to Michigan, Nevada, Iowa, South Carolina, Georgia, Ohio, New York already this year. We're like 6 months in. So he is doing everything. And a reminder, his book is coming out in September. So there'll be a book tour so he can go to even more states after that. So, you know, look,
it's a book or not the book.
Well, everybody, it's book is the only answer.
It's the book
is
primary.
The only answer. Book is the only answer. So look, he's doing everything. He's blocking and tackling. I mean, I think for him, you know, we'll have to see what kind of money he can raise. But you know, look, he was head of the DG here. He's head of the DGA, and so he's getting to meet a lot of donors all across the country. So,
don't we have a spreadsheet somewhere? I feel like there's a column in it. Like, do they have a book or not have a book? And like the people who have a book, we definitely put in our 2028. Like,
oh,
like,
for sure.
Like, it's like a decision tree. It's a decision tree, right? Like, if you write a book, then you are like 15 points or 30 points more likely to be a candidate in 2028.
Right.
If you just have a
Substack, you're probably not running for president like Gretchen Whitmer. So you got to get published.
All right. Well, you know, that's a lot what's going on. I mean, you know, look, I just as a human being, I hope Mitch McConnell is healthy. I hope it gets healthy. Yeah. But it does bring up the question of the gerontocracy. We were talking about this with Simon, our producer, earlier, as we were getting on, that there is this sort of gerontocracy in the Senate and the House of all these people. I think it's like over 100 and something members of the House who are over the age of 70 or something like that. The average age in the Congress is like 64, 65 years old. The one thing that is comforting about this new crop of 2028 candidates to me is they all kind of seem like they're in that 40s and 50s range. We don't really have, God bless Bernie Sanders, but it doesn't look like he's running this year. And he was at the top part, you know, and he's a 80-year-old something guy. So we don't really have one of those this time.
Yeah, although I saw on Instagram Halpern was talking about, oh, I think Bernie Sanders is gonna run. He's still very hale. Like he's gonna be able to do this. It's his movement. He's gonna be the one that's in there. So we'll see. But yeah, I mean, I think really it's only probably like Kamala and Rahm that are in their 60s right now, right? I mean, I don't know how old Mark Kelly is, but he's probably not much older than the 50s.
I think he's about 60. I think he's about the same age as Harris.
Okay.
There like a year. So,
you know, yeah, I think that bodes well. I mean, and some of them are really young. I mean, Ossoff's not even 40 yet. So,
and obviously AOC. Don't forget about AOC.
You can't forget about AOC. you know, on Beshear, one more thing is, you know, there was also an opinion piece in The Hill about a Beshear AOC sort of unity ticket, and that should be something that the Republicans should be very wary of. I think that's sort of the dream ticket, is you get somebody from the moderate wing and then the far left, and we'll put them together and everything's going to be great. And that, you know, I don't know that AOC is going to be on board with all of that. Especially a lot of the policies.
Well, I think we'd have an
sure is going to have to be. So
we'd have an argument about who was on the top line and who was on the second line.
Yeah. Well, I honestly don't think the Republicans are actually too worried about AOC on the top of the ticket. I think they should be, but I don't think that they think that they should be. So
listen, I saw some research earlier about of where people are in the electorate. And I will tell you, across the research I saw was pretty compelling, that across demographics, across parties, the idea of systemic change is very popular. I mean, like 70% popular. Like people, it's not just about changing the prices. It's not just about making things more affordable. People believe that the insiders have the whole thing cooked, and you gotta, like, you know, you got to do something to change that math. And I think that is, that's something that the moderates and the, you know, institutionalists have to pay attention to. It's not just that people are winning these elections, and it's people, the American people, whether they are Trump voters or DSA voters or whatever, they want things to change, and they are open to people who have that argument.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. I agree completely.
Well, nothing's going to change around here, Matt. We will be here
week after week. Every week. Every week.
Yes. So please keep listening. We will be here every week talking about Trailblaze, the road to 2028. And Matt, it's always fun to catch up with you.
Awesome to catch up with you, Jamal.